Welcome to this week's edition of Far West Texas. Readings from the Big Bend Sentinel, the Monahans News, and the Fort Stockton Pioneer, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Melanie, and I'm reading the Big Bend Sentinel on August 20th, 2020. In Capstone Project, SRSU student explores West Texas landscapes through light boxes. By Stephen Polson. A new project by a graduating Sul Ross State University senior is using light boxes to explore the landscapes of West Texas. The project, entitled Memento, comes from fine arts major Alfonso Anaya. It debuted last week and runs through next Friday, August 28th. In an artistic statement about the piece, Anaya said he focused on composition of each photograph with the goal of leaving viewers wanting to know more about what is happening in the space beyond the edges of the photograph. Memento was created to capture a moment in time where I paused and deeply considered the environment around me, Anaya writes. Each image captures a moment I perceived to be beautiful and caused me to analyze the human versus human, human versus nature, and human versus self. For the project, Anaya has put his landscape photographs in light boxes with the electrical wiring exposed. Anaya wrote he aims to create a mood within the gallery and give luminosity and build an environment that printed photos do not have. He also hopes the exposed wiring will cause viewers to question how we use electricity and other resources in our daily lives. In his statement, Anaya pays homage to a number of photographers and artists, including the late Donald Judd, whose focus on positive and negative spaces, he writes, influenced the composition in my photographs. I am documenting my experience with light using slow shutter speeds, Anaya writes in his statement. I am glorifying nature and questioning our future on this earth. Anaya's exhibit is open Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. until 5 p.m. in Studio Gallery Room 102 in the Francois Fine Art Building at Sul Ross State University. Organizers ask that attendees please follow social distancing guidelines. In a changing economy, Marfa businesses evolve or die. By Abby Perot. Marfa. Foot traffic on Highland Avenue is down, said James Havens, the owner of Marfa Wine Company. After county officials shut down hotels, short-term rentals, and RV parks completely this spring, the steady reopening of lodging, restaurants, and businesses has allowed visitors to return, though in much smaller numbers. In its wake, businesses are dealing with an economy that hardly resembles the booming industry of summer 2019 and are fighting to survive it. Since coronavirus impacted nearly every aspect of public life, by the glass, wine, where customers could sit and drink in the Main Street wine shop, seems to be a part of a bygone era. Sarah Goodleaf, a Marfa Wine Company employee, said by the glass seemed neither comfortable nor safe for employees and customers at this point. We've just seen a drastic decrease in traffic and orders in general. For us, being able to go into a wine shop and have tangible things that you can see and talk to somebody about is always welcome, Haven said. But now we've had to totally flip the script and just move to online only, which we didn't have before COVID. That online switch has worked out well, with locals becoming more of the business's customer base than ever before. Businesses around town are each feeling out what's next. And while many are adapting to survive, some have decided closure is the best alternative. Marfa Wine Company's near neighbor, Shy Gallery, shut its doors temporarily and then permanently last month. Going forward, owner Leslie Villarreal said she is figuring out online art sales. Though she's not sure how it will work and said it's hard to sell art online, I'm working on learning how to do it. A bit further down Highland Avenue from the wine company, The Well, a space for massage therapy, yoga, and meditation, has announced its September 21st closure on its website. It's been an honor and a pleasure to serve the community of Marfa and beyond for the past 7 years. But as doors close, other businesses are ready to enter the marketplace, even amidst virus precautions and current trends of slower tourism in the area. When the Marfa line closed, Marfa Art Supply rented the location and opened up shop. Later this year, Esperanza Vintage will move into Shy Gallery's vacant space, expanding their square footage and offerings. When Governor Greg Abbott closed bars for a second time on June 26th. The Lost Horse owner, Ty Mitchell, said the move would likely end his business for good. Asked about whether they would reopen, Mitchell told the Big Bend Sentinel in June, "I hope yes. I'm betting no." Within weeks, Mitchell was in talks to sell the bar after almost 10 years in business. And this week, the final contracts were signed with Michael Shaddux, a restaurateur and Ruidoso resident. "Hearing that Mitchell was not planning to reopen, I thought that was a tragedy," Shaddux said. "How many places that are down-to-earth and affordable for the locals to go, for tourists to go to and hang out, how many places like that are around?" With bars still shuttered around the state under the governor's orders, Shaddux knew the business model for the Lost Horse would have to change quickly to have a shot at surviving if an establishment makes over 50% of its income from non-alcohol sales like food. The state is allowing them to operate. But legally, the food service couldn't be run through an independent entity like El Camino, the kitchen's resident restaurant. To open their doors, the Lost Horse would have to take over the kitchen and start serving up its own grub. And starting tonight, the bar will reopen as the world-famous Lost Horse, rolling out their new menu and welcoming back locals and visitors alike with precautions. They're serving up cowboy cuisine like hatch chili and smoked chicken empanadas and chorizo and pepper jack macaroni and cheese, and holding a grand reopening with live entertainment on Labor Day weekend. Shaddux thinks the next 6 to 9 months will be tough. "We're just going to have to get through this together. The more us businesses work together as opposed to doing for themselves, the better," he said. "People could help each other out during this time. That'll help everybody in the long run." Angela Morgan, the owner of Salon Coterie and Havens of Marfa Wine Company, had businesses in the same building. "I never would have been able to stay afloat without something like a rent break," said Morgan. She recalled pushing her clients' hair appointments back by a matter of weeks in March before realizing the gravity of the closures. As the pandemic dragged on and business was rough, Havens and Morgan landed on an idea to combine their businesses into one shared space in the Salon Coterie shop just off Highland across from the Hotel Paisano. "We won't have to think about survival mode for the rest of the year," Morgan said in late July as Havens, Goodleaf, and Morgan were arranging the layout of the newly combined businesses. Morgan hoped the change would let them come out of this year with growth and savings rather than feeling the economic pains of COVID-19. "It's fun to have something new and intentional during a time when it's like business isn't there anymore," said Morgan. Like many other Marfa businesses fighting to survive, Morgan said that for Salon Coterie and Marfa Wine Company, we're creating a new reality that sustains us both. Presidio has had 4 deaths since June, but no new testing sites. "People call and ask me all the time, when is the next scheduled testing? It breaks my heart that everything is being done in Marfa and not Presidio." By Abby Perot, Stephen Polson. Presidio. Presidio and Marfa have so far had about the same number of total confirmed coronavirus cases, but Presidio has accounted for all the county's 4 deaths. It's a troubling piece of data that indicates larger problems in Texas's COVID-19 response. The border city saw its first death in late July when a 91-year-old man with coronavirus died at the Medical Center Hospital in Odessa on July 31st. Within days, it would see 2 more, 72-year-old and 41-year-old male residents of Presidio. On Monday of this week, Presidio County Judge Cinderella Guevara announced a 4th county death. A 71-year-old male Presidio resident died at the Lubbock Medical Center on August 7th, according to the news release. Meanwhile, Marfa has no deaths. In terms of sheer numbers, Presidio appears to be doing better than Marfa. At press time, the border city had 27 cases compared to 34 in Marfa, despite the fact that Presidio has more than twice as many residents. But looking at other statistics, the data from Presidio doesn't add up. If Presidio really had just 27 cases, then those 4 deaths would give it one of the highest death counts in the world, at around 15%. For comparison, the average national death rate in the United States is just 3.1%, according to data from Johns Hopkins University. Even Italy, where the virus hit hard among the country's elderly population, was lower at 13%. Based on current state-provided information, Presidio County ranks number 10 among Texas counties for the highest rates of deaths per reported cases. When a death rate is that far off from average, it's likely that either the population is more vulnerable, that a larger number of infected people haven't been tested, or both. Across the state, testing and reporting struggles are keeping case counts low and death rates high. Texas now has the 15th lowest testing rates per capita in the country, a rate better than June when it had the 7th lowest testing in the United States, but nonetheless lagging behind the country's average. And it has seen a slew of other problems as well, from backlogs of tests and results to issues with some of the companies it's hired for testing. Testing might not seem so bad in Marfa and Alpine, where residents have recently seen testing sites every 2 weeks. But in Presidio, where the last public testing site was in June, local officials are sounding the alarm about the need to gather more and better data on Presidio City infections. Currently, with no drive-through testing scheduled in Presidio, residents seeking testing will either need to travel to get free testing or visit Presidio's Preventative Care Health Services Clinic, which is providing tests to those who have coronavirus symptoms. But even as drive-through sites have dwindled, PCHS hasn't seen a big uptick in the number of people asking to be tested there. It's been low, like 3 or 4 patients a week, so there's not a lot of people who've been tested, said Linda Molinar, CEO of PCHS. We have a lot of people call wondering if there are random tests, but for us, it's about taking care of the people who are really sick. And at PCHS, many will have to open their wallets, a deterrent for some looking to get tested. Most insurance companies are paying for it, Molinar said, and if you have no insurance, the federal government allows us to temporarily bill them, and they'll reimburse us for that. Still, the appointment that decides whether you need a test can cost anywhere from $25 if a patient has no insurance and is low income to $200. Presidio could try to fund and run its own testing sites with funding from the Federal Emergency Management Agency, or the CARES, Coronavirus Aid, Relief, and Economic Security Act. Gary Mitschke, the Emergency Management Coordinator, said he's considering using the CARES Act money to buy limited tests for first responders. But it's unclear if cash-strapped Presidio could pay to regularly test its residents, not least as the coronavirus crisis continues to stretch budgets. At a meeting in April, City Administrator Joe Portillo estimated the city would see a shortfall of around $800,000 due to coronavirus and coronavirus lockdowns, or around 25% of the city's normal budget. As cases and deaths have climbed in Presidio, officials in the city are growing impatient with the lack of testing, as the Big Bend Sentinel previously reported. Presidio has a bigger population than Marfa, Melinda Richardson, the city's EMS director, said. Presidio has people that are moving back and forth across the border more frequently, and we have a population that's very at risk. So far in the coronavirus crisis, Marfa has had 8 testing sites, while Presidio has had 4. At a Presidio City Council meeting last week, after officials announced another testing site in Presidio County, Portillo lamented the fact that the location, again, is in Marfa. He said he'd spoken about the issue with Presidio County Emergency Management Coordinator Gary Mitschke, who told him the Texas Division of Emergency Management, which runs the testing sites, was overwhelmed and short on people and wanted testing sites in central locations. For now, that means Marfa and Alpine are getting tests rather than any of the more far-flung towns in Presidio or Brewster counties. In a phone call on Tuesday, Stephanie Elmore, the Emergency Management Coordinator for Brewster County, confirmed that she was also having trouble getting more testing for Terlingua and Marathon rather than just Alpine. In an email last week, Elmore asked a TDEM official if there was any way she could request testing for Brewster County's smaller communities so that residents didn't have to travel to Alpine for testing. But the TDEM official explained that unfortunately the answer was probably no. We would like to honor your request for additional testing in Marathon and Terlingua, he wrote. But since we are down to one team for 35 counties, not including El Paso County, it is hard to schedule this. I know that TDEM would like to schedule additional testing locations, he added. But until something changes, we are limited on the testing sites for all our counties in Region 4. At the City Council meeting, Portillo said he understood why officials wanted testing in Alpine. But in Presidio County, he stressed, the most populous city is Presidio. Marfa residents could easily get to Alpine, Portillo said, but for Presidio residents, Getting tested in Marfa could mean a two-hour round-trip drive. Alcy Tavares, Mayor Pro Tem, said residents have been asking him when they could get tested next. "It breaks my heart that everything is being done in Marfa and not Presidio," he said. Nitschke said he's tried to schedule more testing in Presidio City, but TDEM, he said, wants to consolidate and centralize testing locations. In a statement to the Big Bend Sentinel, a TDEM spokesperson confirmed this was true, though he stressed that with private contractors like Honu and Curative now helping out state efforts, there were the same number of testing resources as ever. "In West Texas, we are working with local emergency management officials to centralize testing so that the test sites are accessible to as many Texans as possible in the region," the statement read. "We appreciate the continued partnership with local officials from across the state as we work together to corral COVID-19. In an interview on Tuesday, Judge Guevara said she'd definitely like to see more state testing resources in Presidio. The border city, she noted, has a lot more citizens. When Governor Greg Abbott visited El Paso last week, Guevara said regional officials brought up this issue with the state ones. But at that meeting, Judge Guevara said state officials once again reiterated that they were centralizing testing. Guevara wasn't satisfied. "We definitely need to get a better picture of what's happening in Presidio," she said, "even if that means Marfa and Presidio take turns." For now, county and state officials appear stuck in gridlock. State agencies like TDEM say they are centralizing testing to reach as many residents as possible, while county officials like Guevara are continuing to call for more Presidio testing. It remains to be seen if that will change anytime soon or if Presidio County will find a workaround. But in the meantime, Judge Guevara is continuing to urge residents to protect themselves. In her news release this week, she urged residents to practice the three W's: wearing masks, washing hands, and watching their distance around other people. Ultimately, Presidio's continued lack of testing may come down to geographic luck. Marfa is at the crossroads of two highways, with easy access to nearby towns like Fort Davis, Valentine, and Van Horn. Presidio, on the other hand, is the last stop before Mexico and has very few nearby stateside neighbors except for small borderline ghost towns like Candelaria and Ruidosa. Still, the lack of testing fits into another troubling pattern in Texas, which borderlands communities seem to be disproportionately impacted by coronavirus. Take the Rio Grande Valley on the other side of the state, where Peter Hotez, a prominent disease researcher from Houston, has said a lack of medical resources and state support have created a humanitarian tragedy. On Tuesday, Presidio County's numbers spiked again as county officials announced 12 new cases, bringing the total count to 62. The news was already out of date, with at least 7 of those new 12 patients already released from quarantine. Currently, there are 6 active cases in Presidio. On Wednesday, officials at Presidio Independent School District learned that a high school student had tested positive for coronavirus. Ray Vasquez, the district's superintendent, said in an email, "PISD notified local health authorities and closed all campus buildings as a precaution." Meanwhile, an employee at Presidio County Hall also tested positive, city officials learned Wednesday. The city is currently working on its response to both incidents.
Hello, this is Sonia reading the Fort Stockton Pioneer for Thursday, August 13, 2020. City Council announces tax rate hearings. City takes no action on special request by Sandra Sadek. City Council moved forward with the proposed tax rate for the 2020-2021 fiscal year and announced its 2 public hearing dates for the budget. An application for a special exception for the construction of apartments was recommended to the Planning and Zoning Board by the City's Board of Adjustment on August 11. The proposed tax rate for the 2020-21 fiscal year budget will be 0.4365, and 2 public hearings will be held on September 1st and 8th. The proposed tax rate is a 0.0168 decrease from the current tax rate of 0.4533. The current 2020-21 proposed budget is $9,274,380, a 6.3% decrease from the current budget of $9,899,070. City Council met as the Board of Adjustment to hear a request from Joe Ben Gallegos Jr. and Stephen M. Walker to consider a special exception to construct apartments in the retail district located on 205 West 1st Street and 207 West 1st Street. The special exception request came as a result of the building official denying the owner's request to construct apartments in that area. While all five members of the Board of Adjustment were in favor of the project, no action was taken on the exception, and the request will be sent to the Planning and Zoning Board per City Attorney Pooja Boinpalli's recommendation to avoid legal loopholes. "I don't think anybody here is against the project," said Mayor Chris Alexander. "It's just we need to go through the proper steps to get there so somebody can't appeal our process and kill the project." The two apartments will be 850 and 950 square feet respectively and will each have their private courtyard. The architect for the project is Brantley Hightower, who designed the Nelson Street Theater. "We're going to be building out two apartments in that area," said Gallegos. "We've already purchased the property directly behind it, which will be parking lot for each one of those units and the retail spaces. We're going to be keeping that roof line that's been there for many, many years. We're just going to be repairing it." Several residents and local business owners spoke in favor of the project, including Fort Stockton Community Theater board member Alice Durskin, who said this project will be a great addition to the city of Fort Stockton. "We're all for anything that will improve our city, that will fill these empty buildings," Durskin said. "We know there's a need for housing, so Fort Stockton Community Theater wholeheartedly supports this." The city will also be increasing patrols along Everett Street following multiple speeding complaints were filed with City Hall. "There are kids on go-karts that are flying through that stop sign, and when it hits dusk, you're lucky if you see them," said Councilwoman Pam Palileo. "It would be detrimental if one of them got hit." Talks of changing the speed limit along Everett Street to 25 miles per hour and perhaps adding speed bumps along the street. A decision will be made at the next council meeting. In other action, the council amended Ordinance 20-111 to rezone 1207 East Dickinson Boulevard from a one-family dwelling District 4 to a commercial district for the continued use of a federal government agency as the Texas Department of Transportation's maintenance office. Amended Ordinance 20-112 to rezone 1202 East 12th Street and 1210 East 12th Street from a one-family dwelling District 4 to a commercial district for the construction of an ice and water business. Allowed the placement of a manufactured mobile home with a specific use permit in a single-family, four-residential dwelling on 1103 North Schlegel. Awarded the proposal for conducting the city's 2020 fiscal year audit to Smith & Rives, P.C. Awarded the proposal for designation as the depository for city funds to Pecos County State Bank. Awarded the proposal for emergency repairs of the paddle wheel aerator unit at the city's wastewater plant oxidation ditch to Construction Product Marketing. Purchased a TC8120X 23-yard Town & Country automated side loader from GSP Marketing for $213,583.34, coming out of the budgeted funds in the 2020-21 fiscal year budget. Entered into an agricultural lease with 2T Partnership, allowing the latter to farm on 640 acres of land. Appointed Dolores Blanco Flores to the Keep Historical Fort Stockton Beautiful Board following the resignation of Elizabeth Lynn. Pecos County Historical Commission, Fort Stockton Historical Society. Historical Groups Tackle Preservation Projects, by Sandra Sadek. The COVID-19 pandemic has limited travel worldwide and has forced many tourist attractions to close their doors. However, while the impact of the coronavirus has reached the most popular sites of Fort Stockton, two of the city's historical entities have teamed up to use this opportunity to tackle on restoration projects. The Fort Stockton Historical Society and the Pecos County Historical Commission are working together to beautify Fort Stockton through projects restoring and cleaning up important touristic sites, such as the Sibley House and the officers' quarters at the historical fort. Melba Montoya, director of the Fort Stockton Historical Society, said work has already begun to clean up the overgrown brush near the Sibley House and to make repairs to the officers' quarters 7. "All these community leaders are coming together, even during COVID," Montoya said. "We're still working to beautify so we can have a little bit of the sense of the norm." Pecos County Precinct 2 Commissioner Robert Gonzalez is one of the many community leaders who has given time and workers to the project. His 15 field employees have been working to clean the overgrown mesquite, mow, and water the lawn. "All the credit goes to my employees. I mean, I have an awesome crew. I don't mind helping anybody if it's within my powers, he said. The second major project being worked on is repairing the adobe structure of one of the quarters, according to contractor Bruce Moore, who has been involved in the works since the beginning. The adobe structure of the quarters is made with dirt, clay, and straw, and has traditionally been used to build homes and buildings in the Americas and the Middle East. Moore and his team are striving to repair the officer's quarter using the same historical construction methods. It's a dying art, Moore said. People have left the old, and nobody kept it going. To preserve the historical making of the structure, experts in this ancient method are being brought internationally to work under Moore. The timing of the projects has been useful for the crews involved. The pandemic may have negatively affected tourism in the region, but the lack of visitors has allowed for work to be completed without delay. We haven't had to close to the public to get some of the stuff done, Montoya said. Usually we get a higher traffic when school is about to start. Normally we get maybe 1,200 visitors a month, and now it's dropped close to 150. FSISD to allow remote activities, by Sandra Sadek. The Fort Stockton School Board has voted to allow remote learning students to participate in UIL activities and postponed voting on the School Resource Officers Agreement during their August 10 special meeting. UIL activities. In a 4-2 vote, the school board rejected a resolution prohibiting remote learning students from participating in UIL extracurricular activities. Vice President Flo Garcia and Secretary Anastasio Dominguez voted in favor of the resolution, citing safety precautions. Allowing these kids to be in school will keep them socially distanced. I'm not saying that every kid that's at home is not following the guidelines, but at least at the school we know exactly what they're doing, and our teachers are monitoring the situation, Dominguez said. I understand that there's people with situations and underlying conditions, and that's their choice not to go. But if you're exposing yourself to any of these sports or any extracurricular activity, I feel it is a better choice for us as a school district to make them go to school and head on at the campus where we can monitor and ensure that our kids are staying safe. UIL issued a statement July 10 allowing remote learning students to participate in fall sports, which was supported by the Texas Education Agency. This caused several board members to vote against the resolution and for Superintendent Ralph Trainum to speak against it as well. Right or wrong, these are unprecedented times. We're dealing with issues we haven't had to deal with before, and we're not getting along. But I cannot, in good conscience, support something that goes against the UIL or TEA, said School Board President Billy Espino. According to Beverly Olson, Secretary to the Superintendent, 719 students out of the district's 2,403 students were reported attending face-to-face instruction as of August 11. SRO Agreement. No vote was taken on the SRO agreement as the board awaits the final copy of the agreement. According to Trainum and City Attorney Pooja Boinpalli, all language-related issues have been addressed. The city attorney contacted me with a suggested wording for that one area, and when I talked to our attorney, I told him I agreed with it, said Trainum. The board is hoping to vote on the final proposed agreement during their August 31st meeting. The school board also renewed its insurance in a 6-0 vote. As the value of the properties increased, the total insurance cost increased as well, from $531,776 last year to $546,388 this year. Canceled the November bond election in a 6-0 vote. However, canceling this election does not keep the district from relaunching a bond election at a later date. Decided to move forward with a proposed tax rate of $1.1589, which is a 0.063 decrease from last year. A public hearing on the tax rate will be held on August 31st. Court to set tax rate by new voting machines, by Sandra Sadek. The Pecos County Commissioner's Court proposed its tax rate for the 2021 fiscal year and purchased curbside carts ahead of the 2020 elections during their August 10 meeting. The court will be holding a public hearing on August 17 to discuss the proposed tax rate of 0.7074, which is a decrease from last year's 0.709. The tax rate for the WTTRC Midland branch was set to 0.0234. However, since the proposed tax rate does not exceed the voter approval rate or the no new revenue tax rate, no public hearing will be held for this. The tax rate would bring in $1.8 million more in revenue compared to last year. A request from the county clerk to purchase curbside carts for the 2020 elections was approved. The purchase cost $8,475, which will be funded by the 2020 CARES Act. These carts will aid handicapped and disabled voters cast their ballots. The court also entered into an agreement with Grant Works Incorporated for project delivery services for the County Transportation Infrastructure Fund Grant Program 2020. The contract amounts to $150,451.95. This will include environmental compliance review, report and certification, pre-construction services, pre-construction TIF certification, construction services, TIF billing summaries, invoices, and periodic TIF certification, tracking project budgets and updating lists of transportation infrastructure projects, documentation of design standards and criteria conformance, and post-construction TIF certification. In other action, the court renewed the operations agreement between the Fort Stockton, Pecos County Airport and Fort Stockton Aviation, LLC, for 6 years from September 1, 2020 through August 31, 2026, approved a contract extension between Pecos County and the Permian Basin Community Center's DBA, Permia Care, for mental health deputy services, approved a request from Big Bend Telephone Company to bore across Owego Road, approved a request from AEP Texas Incorporated to construct an aerial electric power line crossing Mendel Road and Kennedy Road. County reports second fatality. Pecos County reported its second COVID-19-related death this week. The Pecos County Emergency Management Office has reported 19 active cases as of August 11, with 1,591 tested individuals and 145 recoveries. The county's second death comes as the number of active cases rose to 23 on August 8 before coming back under the 20 active cases threshold. The 30-day count has now restarted on August 10. The countywide mask order is still in effect. The CDC updated its guidelines on isolation for COVID-19 cases, and the Texas Department of State Health and Human Services issued new recommendations for company employees based on these new guidelines. These guidelines focus on a symptoms-based strategy rather than a test-based strategy. The means individuals will self-diagnose their infectiousness based on their symptoms rather than test results. According to the CDC, data indicates that a person with mild to moderate COVID-19 remains infectious no longer than 10 days after the initial symptoms appear. New isolation guidelines. For most people with COVID-19 illness, isolation can be generally discontinued 10 days after symptoms onset and with a resolution of fever for at least 24 hours without the use of fever-reducing medications. For asymptomatic individuals, isolation can be discontinued 10 days after the date of their first positive test. Persons with severe illness should extend their isolation for up to 20 days after symptoms appear, as the virus may reappear after 10 days. Immune-compromised individuals are recommended to continue following a test-based strategy. Persons previously diagnosed with COVID-19 symptoms who have remained asymptomatic after recovery are recommended not to retest within 3 months after the first initial symptoms appeared. Those who develop new symptoms consistent with COVID-19 within 3 months after the symptoms onset may retest. For persons who never developed symptoms, the date of the first positive test should be used in place of the date of symptom onset. Company recommendations. In line with the CDC's new guidelines, the DSHS issued a letter to employers that a negative COVID-19 test is not required for employees to return to work and instead determine return with a symptoms-based strategy. This means staying home until at least 10 days have passed since the symptoms first appeared or the date the specimen was collected if the person did not have any symptoms, being fever-free for at least 24 hours without taking fever-reducing medication and seeing an improvement in symptoms. Individuals who meet these criteria can return to work, according to DSHS. Obituaries in the Fort Stockton Pioneer for August 13, 2020. Jerry Williams Alexander. Jerry Williams Alexander, Bill, passed away on August 5, 2020 at the age of 78. He was born January 25, 1942, in Brownwood, to James and Eleanor Alexander, and was a resident of Fort Stockton. He enjoyed reading Westerns, playing guitar, and Old West history. He was preceded in death by his parents, James Williams and Eleanor Aileen Alexander, daughter Carrie Ann Alexander, brothers Evan Alexander and Paul McFadden, and sister Geneva Dee Dee Fontaine. He is survived by his sons, Bill Shane Alexander of Noble, Oklahoma, and Johnny Ray Alexander and wife Laura of Cedar Park, Texas, daughter Juanita Pye Aileen Alexander of Canyon Lake, Texas, brothers Arnold Alexander and Fred McFadden, sisters Mary Dennis and Martha Strickland, grandchildren Johnny Ray Alexander Jr., Nicholas Charles Alexander, Harley Shane Belliter, and Avery Winters, and a great-grandchild, Elena Rain Alexander. A private service was held by the family. Remembrances and condolences may be shared with the family at heritagefuneralhomeofthebigbend.com. Johnny Joe Castro. Johnny Joe Castro passed away on August 5, 2020, at the age of 50. He was born December 11, 1969, to Mariano and Margarita Castro in Alpine, Texas, and was a resident of Fort Stockton. Johnny married his high school sweetheart, Sandy. He was preceded in death by his parents, Mariano Rios Castro Sr. and Margarita Chalambaga Castro. Survivors include his wife, Sandra Molinar Castro, of 24 years, sons Jay Fortino Castro, Andrew Nathaniel Castro, and Evian Xavier Castro of Fort Stockton, daughter Anessa Janae Castro of Fort Stockton, brother Mariano Castro Jr. of San Antonio, and sister Sandra Castro Pacheco of Midland. Graveside services were held Monday, August 10 at 12:30 p.m. at East Hill Cemetery, Fort Stockton. Remembrances and condolences may be shared with the family at heritagefuneralhomeofthebigbend.com. Charles Murphy. Charles Murphy passed away on August 1, 2020, at the age of 39. Charles was born on October 14, 1980, in Van Horn, Texas, to Toulon and Letty Murphy. Charles is survived by his children, Gabriel Lamar Murphy and Kingston Jordan Murphy, his parents, Toulon Murphy Jr. and Letty Murphy, brothers Toulon, Sonia Murphy, Timothy, Melissa Murphy, his sister Monica, Mary Murphy, nieces Adriana, Gabriela, and Shelby, his nephews TJ and Leon, all of Fort Stockton. Charles is preceded in death by his paternal grandparents, Toulon and Felina Murphy, and his maternal grandparents, Secundino and Eduviges Ramirez. Remembrances and condolences may be shared with the family at heritagefuneralhomeofthebigbend.com. Joseph Anaya. Joseph Anaya of Fort Stockton passed away August 5th in Allen, Texas, at the age of 94 years. He was born on April 15, 1926, to Jose and Joanna Sanders Anaya in Lake End, Louisiana. Joe is survived by his 8 children, Amelia Benavides and her husband Raymond, Eduardo Holguin and his wife Tirza, Deacon Danny Holguin and his wife Elma, Anna McRae and her husband Frank, Rudy Holguin and his wife Irma, Sammy Holguin, Melva Tyler, and her husband Steve, Joanne Frazier and her husband Stephen, his 2 siblings Consuelo, Connie, Iribarren, and Joanne Chinavar. Joe is survived by 28 grandkids and 45 great-grandkids. Joe is preceded in death by his parents, Jose Anaya and Joanna Davalos, his wife Ampara Anaya, his son Silvestre Holguin, and siblings Martin Davalos and Esperanza Cruz. His services were held at Our Lady of Guadalupe downtown campus. Burial followed at Fort Stockton Catholic Cemetery. John Dalton Vick. John Dalton Vick, 60, of Midland, passed away Monday, August 3, 2020, in Jeff Davis County. John was born in Fort Stockton on October 14, 1959, to Ruby and Dalton Vick. He is survived by 2 sisters, Perry Banks and husband Henry Banks and son Aaron Banks, Trudy Johnson and spouse Phil Johnson, and daughters Beth Ann Frazee and Lindsay Dickerson, 2 sons, Ty and daughter-in-law Lindsay Vick, and Mike Vick and significant other Rhonda Nixon. He also leaves behind grandchildren, Samantha Kuhlman, Rowdy Vick, Reston Vick, Trey Vick, Ruby Joe Vick, Allie Vick, and Adeline Holt. A memorial service will be held on August 15, 2020 at 10 a.m. Barbecue lunch will be at 11:30 a.m. provided by Heartland Beef. Memorial team roping begins at 2 o'clock p.m. Booths open at 1 o'clock p.m. Memorial services and team roping are held at the Sol Ross Sail Arena in Alpine. Alpine Memorial Funeral Home was entrusted with his services. Online condolences may be left at alpinememorialfuneralhome.com.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Monahan's News for Thursday, August 13th. PT renovation bid approved. Clinic will move to temporary location. The story was written by Paul Cyphers. The Ward Memorial Board of Managers, in their meeting last Thursday night, approved a bid of $2.73 million from M&W Builders for renovations to the physical therapy facility on South Ike Avenue. That action was scheduled to be considered for approval by the Ward County Commissioners in their Monday morning meeting. Bill Parsons, architect with the Vandergrift Group, reviewed the five bids received for the project. Although M&W Builders was not the lowest bid, the managers agreed with the recommendation of Parsons based on the reputation and quality of work of M&W Builders, the firm that did the construction of the ER, radiology, and clinic updates for the hospital. Quote, "Of the five bids received, only two called us with questions about the plans. To us, that was a concern as an indicator that they may not have studied the plans as thoroughly. Only M&W and Cooper Construction called with questions," Parsons said. The bids were submitted with three areas in addition to the base plans, giving the managers the option to include some or all of the areas. The areas were 1. Therapy pool, 2. New LED lighting in the conference room, and 3. New parking lot on the south side of the building. Before any of the construction can begin, asbestos abatement must be done. Parsons said the paint on the outside of the building contained asbestos and would have to be ground off and then repainted. The total cost of the abatement was $119,000, which was not included in any of the construction bids. Quote, "The actual remodeling cannot start until the abatement is completed. Additionally, the entire building will need to be closed for the duration of the construction project. With all of the equipment and construction activity, it is not practical to try to keep the physical therapy clinic open," Parsons said. Hospital CEO Leticia Rodriguez said, quote, "We are looking into finding an alternative building to house the physical therapy building to keep it in operation. Perhaps something like a double-wide mobile home might be a solution. Right now, we don't know the cost of that," end quote. Managers present for the meeting were Dr. John Fawcett, Larry Hunt, Gerald Carlson, Tommy Escamilla, and Frank Heslin. Managers Angel Fuentes, Lisa Stewart, and Jeff Burdick were not present. Commissioners propose lowering tax rate. The story was written by Paul Cyphers. In their regular meeting on Monday morning, Ward County Commissioners approved a proposed reduction in ad valorem tax rate from 69 cents to 66 cents per $100 in property valuation for 2021. The tax base is comparable to last year with an increase of about 3.6%, and the new rate will produce a slight decrease in total revenue to the county. According to Ward County Tax Assessor Collector Vicki Heflin, the average homestead taxable value increased by 11% from $40,000 to $45,000. At the proposed rate, the average tax will increase from $279 to $297, an increase of 6%. The total tax levy on all properties in the county will decrease from $34.2 million to $34.0 million, a drop of 0.7%. A public hearing will be held on August 24th at 9:30 for the 2021 budget. Ward County Judge Greg Holly presented some of the highlights in the upcoming proposed budget. Elected officials and employees will not receive a pay raise this year. Quote, many of our friends and neighbors have lost jobs, seen reduced hours, and so on. It does not seem appropriate to provide a pay raise in this environment. However, our employees are well taken care of with stability of employment, competitive wages, and benefits. Longevity raises, if applicable, will continue, Holly said. Other items highlighted were providing $1 million each for County Precincts 1, 3, and 5 for county roads. The county will also receive $5 million from the state for roads. Other projects in the proposed budget are a new community center for Barstow, which would cost $500,000, a proposed joint project with the City of Monahans for a new animal shelter, $250,000, set aside $400,000 for a new ladder truck for the fire department for a future purchase. Renovation to a building south of the Coliseum to move extension service from Ward County Annex to allow more space for DPS in the Annex, $100,000. Purchase of a ready-built building in Barstow for use by Sheriff's Department and other law enforcement, $75,000. Set aside funds for smaller renovations at the Golf Course Pro Shop, Juvenile Probation, and Sheriff's Office. Holly also presented his thoughts for long-term projects. Quote, in the next 10 years, I would like us to plan for a new jail and a new hospital, both of which are approaching 50 years of age, a new law enforcement center in the next 3 to 5 years, and a new hospital in the next 8 to 10 years. We should think long-term for these projects and continue to pay for them without debt, as we have with other projects, such as the event center and new arena. We've done it in the past, and Lord willing, we can do it again. End quote. Commissioners present for the meeting were Tino Sanchez, Larry Hanna, Dexter Nichols, and Eddie Nelms. In other actions, the commissioners approved the bid of $2.7 million from M&W Builders for renovation to the physical therapy building of the hospital. The action ratified the recommendation of the Hospital Board of Managers. In COVID-19-related discussions, effective immediately, the Ward County Senior Center will begin delivering meals every day, Monday through Friday, to seniors instead of the Monday and Wednesday that had been in place since April. Quote, we should have a discussion at next meeting to possibly open the Senior Center back up for dining in. It is the only outlet that many of our seniors have, Holly said. Also, the county will make the event center available to Walker Junior High, if needed, for volleyball practice. Two actions were taken regarding the CTIF, County Transportation Infrastructure Grant, to help with maintenance of county roads. The CTIF grant provided about $5 million to assist the county with road projects. The first action was an agreement with Grant Works to provide project delivery services for the CTIF grant. Cost of the Grant Works agreement is $193,000. Grant Works will provide environmental compliance review, pre-construction services for bids and contracts, procurement and equipment rates, construction services, TIF billing, and more. The second action was a resolution adopting the design criteria and specifications for the CTIF grant. The resolution adopts TxDOT's standards and specifications along with the roadway design manual for projects under the CTIF program. Bulk water rates increased, proposed tax rate up. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. Meeting in regular session Tuesday, the Monahan City Council voted to raise bulk water sales from $10 per 1,000 gallons to $13.50 per 1,000 gallons for non-potable purposes. The second and final reading of Ordinance Number 1279 was approved unanimously. The change will go into effect on October 1st. The new rate is about a 35% increase and should provide the city with anywhere from $20,000 to $50,000 in additional revenue compared to sales for the past year, City Manager Rex Thee said. Thee told the council that the water was treated water, not for human consumption, from the city's well field, and that it was primarily used for industry, such as cement plants, road construction, and also in the oil field. In other business, a public hearing was held to hear the proposed 2020-2021 city budget. Several members of the public were present for the public hearing, but no one had any comments about the budget. The full budget detail will be included in an upcoming edition of the news. Since there were no comments from the public, council members approved the first reading of the 2021 budget in the amount of $13.1 million. Along with Thee, Mayor David Cutbirth, and Councilman Jeppy Wilson, Richard Hawkins, Calvin Carroll, and Rudy Hernandez were in attendance during Tuesday's meeting. Councilman Ivy Valenzuela was absent. The proposed ad valorem tax rate by the City of Monahans will increase 2 cents from the current 33 cents per $100 valuation to 35 cents per $100 valuation for the 2020 tax year. The proposal passed the council by a unanimous vote. Quote, "The total tax rate is comparable to last year with an increase of about 6%. The number is based on $25 million less in mineral valuations. Therefore, the no new revenue rate will not generate any new income for the city," Thee said. According to Ward County Tax Assessor Collector Vicki Heflin, the average homestead taxable value increased by 10% from $71,000 to $78,000. At the proposed tax rate, the average tax will increase from $234 to $275, an increase of 17%. The total tax levy on all properties in the county will increase $1.4 million to $1.45 million, an increase of 0.9%. Quote, "Since the no new revenue rate is not over 0.3978 cents per $100 valuations, a hearing is not required to set the new tax rate," he added. The public meeting to set the 2020 tax rate will be held on August 25th during the regularly scheduled meeting of the City Council in the Council Chambers at City Hall at 3 p.m. COVID-19 cases up to 9. Masks still required. The story was written by Paul Cyphers. There are now 9 confirmed cases of the COVID-19 virus, according to Ward County Judge Greg Holly. Quote, "I currently show that we have 9 active cases. However, 8 of these cases, for which I've received no detailed information from DSHS, I only know of them because of the total numbers I see on the website. Once I have detailed information from DSHS on these newest cases, there's a good chance we might find that a few of them have already recovered," Holly said. Holly also updated the requirement for wearing masks. Quote, "When the governor's mask mandate was issued, we were able to obtain an exemption because our active cases were less than 20. Then, when that number exceeded 20, we lost the exemption. The rules allow me to apply for the exemption again after a period of 30 days, and only if active cases are less than 20. As of today, it's been 30 days, and according to my records from the DSHS reporting, we have only 9 active cases. However, the website still shows us with 23 active cases. This is due to the website's slow reporting of recoveries, as discussed many times before. So, technically, we remain under the mandate. As a practical matter, though, I'm not aware of any citations being issued in Ward County for failure to follow the mandate. We encourage people to wear masks, but don't enforce it with a strong arm, he said. As of Wednesday morning, there have been 94 confirmed cases with 83 recoveries, 9 active, and 2 deaths. There have been 731 tests administered locally, with 9 tests pending. Across the local area, Hector County has reported 3,587 cases with 55 deaths and 2,777 recovered. Midland has 2,788 with 49 deaths and 1,359 recovered. Andrews County has 304 confirmed cases with 220 recovered and 7 deaths. Reeves County has 196 cases with 2 deaths and 189 recovered. Pecos County has reported 139 cases with 116 recovered and 1 death. Crean County has 70 confirmed cases and 10 deaths. Winkler County has 84 confirmed cases and Reagan County has 61. Statewide, there are 133,584 active cases, 490,817 total cases, 349,833 recovered, and 8,490 deaths. Nationally, there are 5,023,649 confirmed cases with 161,842 deaths. WJHS boys coach tests positive for COVID-19. A coach at Monahans Wicket Pyote ISD has tested positive for the COVID-19 virus, school superintendent Chad Smith told the Monahans News Tuesday afternoon. Quote, one coach has tested positive for the virus, but has not had any symptoms. Every other coach that has been in contact with him has been quarantined for 14 days. None of the other coaches have exhibited any symptoms. Quote, no students have been affected as distancing guidelines have been strictly adhered to with a minimum of 6 feet separation and coaches and students are wearing masks as prescribed, Smith said. None of the athletic programs are affected at this time.
Thank you for joining us for this week's edition of Far West Texas. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.